It's a privilege to be introducing again our speaker, Dr. Niels Erik Andreassen. He's the president of our very own institution, Andrews University. And he will be challenging us today on a topic, the relevancy of institutional boards to the health mission of the church. I believe this topic is not only for those who are sitting in the boards, but for every one of us. I hope and pray that this will give us insight as to the responsibilities that we have as a church, particularly for those who are sitting in the boards. Dr. Andreassen, please welcome. And let's give a big, big hand again.
Thank you very much, and thank you, Dr. Andreassen, for the invitation to be here. It's been a wonderful conference so far. This morning we have heard Dr. Winslow's heartwarming talk about God's love, and Dr. De Lange's passionate speech about the environment and our world. And now we have to focus on something as awful and mundane as institutional boards. These irritating groups of mostly men and some women who actually can be dangerous to your life. Why do we want to talk about institutional boards in a conference like this? Let me try to put it spot on. On Monday evening afternoon, we heard from an official of the World Health Organization what a powerful instrument our church is in support of improving human life, because we have so many thousands, tens of thousands of congregations scattered all over the world with about 25 million people, including children in them. That's the size of the Adventist family. Think of the number of touch points our church has for good when it comes to improving the quality of life for people in the world. That was observed by the World Health Organization. What wasn't mentioned is that we also have institutions that do the same kind of work. Healthcare institutions, very big ones employing tens of thousands of people, and very little one that can be packed into a suitcase. We have these institutions, and I can't help but adding to them the educational institutions, of which we have more than 7,000 in our church. And in these educational institutions, we admit now something like 1.5 million students each year. That's a number equal to 10% of our official adult church membership. And all these students, young ones, are exposed to the principles of improved quality of life. And remember, these students don't stay in our schools forever. After 3, 4, 5 years, they graduate and are replaced with another 1.5 million young people. So that in 20, 25 years, as many students as half of our adult membership in our church have been exposed to these principles and are additional touch points for good in the world. So the question is, how can these institutions, healthcare institutions and educational institutions, be better equipped or better positioned to contribute to this important work? Hence the relevancy of the institutional board to the health mission of our church. What can the boards do to help strengthen our institutions in this important work? That's what this talk is about, and let's see what we can figure out together. The organizational structure of the Seventh-day Adventist Church requires all its institutions, such as schools, colleges, universities, hospitals, clinics, and publishing houses, to establish governing boards. These boards are appointed by the members or constituents of the respective institutions and are charged with maintaining the institutional mission, good governance, and accountability. Perhaps the most important and foremost of these responsibilities for the boards of our institutions has to do with the mission, maintaining a clear mission of what the institution is about. That came home to me yesterday afternoon. I thought I might make this relevant. I was here minding my own business at this wonderful conference, and my telephone rang. And I rushed out and took the call, and guess what? It was from a chairman of an institutional board who was getting ready to hire an administrator. And he wanted some input from me as to the suitability of a certain candidate for this position of administration in an institution, and it was on the other side of the world, you will never guess where. So he asked me all the questions, and I gave all the obligatory answers, and then he paused and honed in some more on the same question he has raised with me before. How about this, and how about that? Would this candidate understand this and be open to that? And I said to him, sir, it sounds to me as though you're changing the institution's mission just a bit. And he said, strange you would say that. As a matter of fact, several board members would like to do that. I said, in that case, you ought to be clear first about the mission of your institution and then hire a manager to run it. If you don't do it that way, it's like going into the field trying to shoot a rabbit without aiming first. So mission really comes first, and then you find the manager to help implement that. That's why mission is so important. How can the healthcare institutional board protect and preserve the institution's purposes, the mission, and ultimately advance the mission of the church? That's our question. Now let me illustrate by referring to some mission statements of some healthcare institutions that I know a little bit about. This is just for illustrative purposes. Here's the first. I used to work at Loma Linda for 13 years, so I checked on the mission statement of that university and hospital, and I'll refer to that in a minute by way of illustration. Adventist Health System, the headquarters in Florida, I sit on the corporate board of that organization, so I follow that a little bit, including its mission statement. I'm sorry, these are big institutions, but that happens to be the one I'm acquainted with. And finally, Lakeland Healthcare. That's a hospital in our local Western Michigan region. I sit on the operation board of that one and also on a strategic planning committee of that hospital. So what kind of mission statements do they have? And what can we learn from them? Here's Loma Linda. To make man whole, or whole person care, is the way I heard it expressed today. There are other ways of expressing it. I took it off the web page, and these are just abbreviated statements. Whole person care is a little more gender inclusive. That's from Loma Linda. Adventist Health System, mission statement, extending the healing ministry of Christ. A very interesting mission statement by that very big corporation employing 60 or 70,000 employees in healthcare service. And locally near Andrews University, here's a mission statement, medical excellence, compassionate care. Now that is not a faith-based institution. Nothing to do with religion, but yet compassionate care is part of its mission statement. I found that interesting. So the question is, what characterizes a good mission statement from the board's perspective for healthcare institution? What should we look for? What have we seen? Something short, easy to remember, and keep with you at all times. Something concrete. You can say what it is, and people can get it right away. Something that can be operationalized. Do we want to hire a non-compassionate physician at Lakeland Health? No, that wouldn't work, because we are committed to compassionate care. See, something that is emotive, that's a good mission statement. We feel warm about it. Something that can be the basis for decision making. These kind of mission statements are good. So I recommend for our institutions around the world that we pick mission statements that function that way. Short, focused, easy to remember, and helpful in making decisions. That is the first assignment of a healthcare board. Mission. Let's move on. Vision is another responsibility of the board. It needs to affirm the vision for the institution. What is the vision? Well, the vision describes the aspiration of the institution, the big stretch goal. This is what we want to become. This is the future of our institution. What are some interesting vision statements from these three institutions I just referenced? Here's Loma Linda. To exceed the minimum standards and expectations in healthcare. Here's Adventist Health. To meet and exceed both service standards and patient expectations. Very similar in many ways. And here's Lakeland. That's interesting. To be the preeminent provider of integrated healthcare by 2014, meaning in our region. That's quite an ambitious vision, but remember, Lakeland is the only healthcare in that district, so they don't have too much competition just now. These are vision statements, and as you look at them, you may say to yourself, well, they're pretty modest. To exceed minimum standards, to meet and exceed service standards and patient expectations. Are these visions too low? Let me explain from a healthcare board member's perspective what they mean as I understand it. Hospitals, healthcare facilities, are expected to treat patients with certain illnesses according to certain established protocols for those illnesses. Say 10 steps physicians have to take when a patient comes in with a certain ailment, because it is discovered that taking those steps gives the best results. Minimum standards. Best results means most survival and lowest mortality rate. All right? So that's minimum standards, and these institutions want to exceed that. Let's say for a certain ailment, the protocol calls for 10 steps, medicine, nurses, lab, diagnostic steps, treatment steps, pills, injections, whatever it is, 10 steps to get the best results out. And in a given hospital, these 10 steps occurs in 95% of the cases of patients coming in. That's pretty good. In a few cases, they don't all get done for one reason or another. And the effectiveness is high, and the mortality is rate. Let's say one person in 1,000 patients don't make it. These are the kind of minimum standards that healthcare institutions measure themselves against and should measure themselves against. And now this vision statement is saying we want to meet those and exceed. So the protocol applies not to 95% of the cases, but 98%, for example. And the mortality rate drops, drops, drops. One death in 1,500, let's say, patients, just by way of example. That's the kind of vision that is appropriate for a healthcare institution, and we should think, the board should think about that. So I sit on a board in a healthcare institution, and I get a report that we are following this protocol in 98% of the cases, and the mortality rate is dropping. And I feel really good about that. But if it goes the other way, that the protocol is not followed in as many high percentages as I'd like to see, I put up my little finger and I say, excuse me, should we accept patients like that, or should we send them off to another hospital where this protocol is followed more carefully and the mortality rate is lower? Shouldn't we? Until we get it figured out? That's the board member's responsibility in a healthcare institution. That's vision. Let's go on. Values. The board is interested in the values of a healthcare institution. What kind of values? Here's what Loma Linda says, and I'm abbreviated from the webpage. Compassion, integrity, excellence, freedom. Freedom has to do with the respect we offer the patients who come in for help. Adventist Health System, Christian, community, compassion, diversity, ethics, quality, are words to describe the values of that institution, summarized briefly. And here's the third. People, quality, growth, finance, service. How is finance a value to patients? Well, if the hospital is well capitalized, it can bring in the latest and best diagnostic systems or better labs, and that helps patients. So finance is a kind of value for some of these institutions. So what are good values, and why should the board care about them? Values translate into the corporate culture of these institutions and the operational effectiveness, and the board is keenly interested in these values. They inspire, they uplift the institution. They help the institution attract quality staff who like to work in an institution of high values. They produce good results. They minimize litigation. There are many, many reasons why the board should be interested in the values along with the vision and the mission of our institution. And that's the most important function of institutional boards for healthcare institutions. Now for the rest of my talk, let me just say a little bit about how such boards are put together and how they operate. And I will try to be brief. The governing board. The board and some definitions. Where does a board come from? How is it put together? And how does it operate? Well, we begin with a corporate membership. These are the constituents, the owners of the institution. And if you have your wits about you, you will take up Dr. Winslow on his word. He said that all of you are owners of Loma Linda. If I were you, I would have him sign that and put your name on top. And then you can cash in sometimes on your ownership. That's in a spiritual sort of sense. But each healthcare institution should have a constituency or corporate membership that's the stakeholders, those who really own the place. We begin with that. And this constituency, these owners, draw up bylaws. This is a document, a formal document that describes how the institution works and how the board is appointed and how the board works. I brought with me the bylaws from Andrews University. You see, colleges have them too. And if you're interested in seeing what good bylaws looks like, we just revised ours. I don't think they improved much, but we have them, and they work pretty well. So we have the bylaws, and the bylaws specify how the board is put together and how the board relates to management. It's all in the bylaws. And the board that has been put together by the bylaws then follows certain board policies which describes how the board works. And these policies are disclosed in the board minutes, or you could disclose them in a board policy manual, which we are working on at Andrews right now. And then finally, the board is sometimes expected to represent the institution and promote it in a public arena, but that's sort of unusual and not the main function of board members. Here's a picture of the whole thing relative to the governing board. It begins with the oval, the members. That's the owners, the stakeholders, the constituents that meet once in a while. There could be a segment of the church, members or officers in the region where the healthcare institution is located. And this membership comes together once in a while and they draw up constitutional bylaws that guides the appointment of a board and determines how the board functions. We call that the governing boards, because it's concerned with the mission and the governance of the institution. And that governing board, as you can see, has three functions. It appoints the management, it governs by policy, and from time to time represents and supports the institution. So let's just say the constituency has met, the corporate members have met, they have drawn up the bylaws, they have appointed the board, or they are just about to appoint the board. Now, what will that board look like? It will have some officers. There will be a chair and a vice chair. Generally speaking, in our church, the chair or the vice chair are church officials. And in a way that's good, and in a way that's bad. The good thing about it is that these chairs, vice chairs, who are officials in the church, know a whole lot about the church and its operations. That's the upside. The downside is that oftentimes they're ex officio members of the board, and they can be thrust into board chairmanship with no warning. That's a downside. It's better really for a chair of the board to be selected from a board member who's been on the board for quite some time. So we select the chair and the vice chair. These two people must understand the institution well, and they must understand the public well also. And then a secretary is appointed to the board. Oftentimes, that is your chief executive officer, the president, or the administrator of the institution. That is the framework of the board. The rest of the members are then chosen. In our denomination, many are ex officio. That means they are on the board by virtue of office. Some of them are elected board members. My recommendation is, you will have some ex officio, you may have many. It's also good to have some elected board members. Let me tell you why. At Andrews University, we have a very big board. It's bigger than it should be. Half the members are ex officio, church officials. The other half are elected. It has been helpful to have a good group of elected board members, faithful Seventh-day Adventists committed to Christian education. Why is that good? Because in some sense, the elected board members represent the public interest a little bit easier. They are part of the public. They don't work in church offices. They work in other offices in the community, and they have their ear to the community ground, and they understand what the public is looking for. The public means our church members or the people in the community who get sick and need to go to our hospital. It's good to have a kind of a public awareness on the board, and you do that by having quite a few elected board members, enough of them so they feel comfortable talking with each other. That's really important. So a balance of expertise on the board is a good thing. Let me not linger there. In terms of service, the ex officio board members serve as long as they are in office, and that could be 5 years or 10 years, whatever. The elected board members don't serve on a cycle like that, and sometimes that means they serve forever and ever, and that's not a good thing. So elected board members might find it helpful. The board chair might find it helpful. The corporate membership might find it helpful to rotate the elected board members in and out once in a while so new blood can be brought into the board. That's a good thing. It's important to educate the board members. We do that at Andrews by having board workshops once in a while, not too often, but once in a while. Think of that. Train the board members to do their job well. The best person to do that, to organize that, is the secretary of the board, the manager of the institution, the president, or chief executive officer. Let's come to board responsibilities quickly. I'm just going through those, and you will see what they are. Appoint the president or chief executive officer. That's the job of the board. Approve the institution's mission. Very important. Probably comes in first. We talked about that as fundamental. Approve strategies to achieve these institutional objectives. The board must approve the institution's strategic plan. Approve the annual budget. The budget is prepared by management, not by the board, but the board approves it. Receive and approve annual financial audits of the financial operation. Nowadays, it's common for these audits to be received from an audit committee that is composed of board members with no institutional employees on the board. Here's another one. Very important for healthcare institutions. receive information about institutional, regulatory, and compliance issues. What regulations apply to the healthcare institution in the country or region where it is operated, and who makes sure that these regulatory and compliance issues are met? Well, the board has to make certain and must ask for a report from somebody who keeps oversight of these regulatory matters. All they have to do with the way buildings are built, safety in buildings, the security of patients, patients' rights, whatever it is, infections, problems in the hospital, and the levels that are tolerated, and so on, all of these regulatory issues. Then evaluation of management is another possibility of the board. And finally, it must make sure that it delineates the proper division of labor between the board and management, the board chair and the president or administrator of the institution, of the healthcare institution. Who does what? I'll come back to that in a minute. But the board must make sure that it governs and the administration manages. That's the long and the short of it. Here's a picture of the whole thing. The pyramid, starting at the top with the vision, values, mission that we talked about, so important. Then management, choosing management. Then strategic plans. Where is this institution going? The board must look after those. Then the budget. The budget has to support the strategy, and the board must see to it that it does. Audit, regulations, and compliance issues follow. And finally, evaluation of the whole system. Is it working? Annual evaluations are really important. Because there's often confusion about the job of the board and the job of management, let me say a word about management's responsibility. That is what the president or the administrator must do. He or she must implement the mission and vision of the institution, see to it that it gets done after the board has voted it, uphold the institution's values in daily operations. That is management's job, not the board chair. Prepare an annual budget, not to approve the budget, but to prepare it is management's job. Select the staff that is needed to operate the institution. Maintain and protect the institution's assets. That's management's job. Manage the daily operations of the institution and respond to the regulatory and compliance requirements. Respond to them, and the board checks up to make sure that that response has been made. So here's management's institution responsibilities versus the board's. Let's do a quiz. Let's look at all these responsibilities and ask, who is responsible? Preparing a budget? Management. Right. Hiring staff? Management. Right. Developing strategies? Management. Developing strategies. The board will approve them. You will see. Appointing management and setting remuneration? Board. Correct. Receiving audit reports? Board is correct. Meeting regulatory and compliance issues? Management. Meets them. The board checks up on it. Right. Managing fixed assets. Management does that. Establishing institutional mission. Board does it. Correct. Appointing new board members. The board does, according to the bylaws that we talked about. Management does not. Speaking publicly for the institution. Management. Sometimes board members are invited to participate, but essentially that is management. Approving budgets. Board does it. Correct. Disposing of institutional assets. Board, not management. Management looks after them. Board disposes of them if that needs to be done. Evaluating the CEO. Board does. We are doing well. Reporting to the membership that meets once in a while. The board does, yes, because the membership appointed the board in the first place. Huh? So now the board reports back to the membership. Sometimes that happens by the board chair asking the board secretary, who is the president of the institution, to help with that reporting. Finally, and again briefly, how can we make our board meetings more effective? Schedule them well in advance. That's easy at Andrews because the board meetings are scheduled by the General Conference. We don't have a say. But if you have a say, schedule them well in advance, very carefully. Provide the board members with material ahead of time, and that can be done electronically, we have discovered. It works well. Assign complex and time-consuming board agenda items to subcommittees. You probably do that already. That's really important, so that a big discussion happens before the board meeting proper. Keep careful minutes of all board actions, and these minutes eventually form the corpus of the institution's board policies. It helps the board know what it's supposed to do, and it finds that out by looking at the minutes. That is, unless we have a board policy manual, which may be a good thing to do. Delineate the division of labor between management, that's the president, and the governance activities, which is the board, and include these board principles in the board manual. And finally, I found it helpful to build board community. It's not easy to do sometimes, because board members are people of many different opinions. But I've discovered recently, as I've had to, what do you say, re-establish a good relationship with my board. You know, I had a little bit of tiff with the board some time ago. I don't think I was entirely responsible for that, but getting together once in a while over dinner is just a good thing to do. Let board members talk with each other. Let them talk with the chief executive officer. Some social community building activity, non-work activity, is a very good thing for the board to engage in. These are some practical suggestions for effective board activities in support of these institutions. So in conclusion, I would say to you, to make our health care ministry more effective, we have our congregations with millions of touch points to the public of this world. But we also have our institutions, and they can do wonderful work because of their high profile in the communities where they are located. And good boardmanship can make these institutions immeasurably more effective. God bless as you work on that.